Can Benton Harbor save its high school? The district is drowning in debt. Student test scores at Benton Harbor High are among the lowest in the state. And that's why Governor Whitmer wants to shut it down. But the community and the students are fighting back. Here's student Tanae Allen.
They don't know us. Numbers don't define our intelligence. We are way smarter than you guys make us out to be.
School officials are in a closed-door meeting today with Governor Whitmer, with her Friday deadline looming. But this is not just a Benton Harbor problem. Other school districts in our state are struggling. So how do we decide which schools are failing? Well, let's turn to Stateside's education commentator, Matinga Ragatz, and also John Young, an associate professor in educational administration at Michigan State University. Matinga, how do you define a failing school?
Well, it depends what you're looking for, Cindy. I mean, if you're looking for test scores, then tests will define whether the school is failing or not. But if you're looking for a community of people who take care of their students, who are helping the students make sense of the world, then most schools are not failing.
John, right now, how does the state decide that a school is failing? What metrics are they looking at?
Well, the state actually doesn't decide whether a school is failing or not. They try to rank the schools on various criteria, and then they use that criteria and put it into this index. And these criteria were defined by the ESSA, the Every Student Succeeds Act, and they're supposed to use indicators around student growth, student proficiency. Both of those are actually measured by test scores. They actually have to also have indicators of school quality and student success. These can include things like chronic absenteeism, advanced coursework, post-secondary enrollment. So it's a wide range of things, but that wide range of things is over a relatively narrow band of what schools actually do. In fact, there's a lot of research that suggests that schools are at their best when they are promoting a lot of soft skills. Those are skills that are related to being able to work together in groups, being able to work on complex problems over a long period of time.
In fact, Matinga, we heard at the very top of this interview Benton Harbor High School student Tanae Allen saying, numbers don't define our intelligence. We're way smarter than you guys make us out to be. How much of a student's learning is reflected in test scores?
Oh my gosh, first of all, I want to hire that girl because, you know, when we as adults make decisions, it affects these students much more than we think it does. And just to back up a little bit, I think, again, this measuring stick that we're using to measure the school performances, I think sometimes they're skewed. In my opinion, this is my opinion alone, that schools in areas of poverty are just imitations, like bad imitations of rich schools. And then we need to just look at the whole spectrum and say, okay, so what is it that these kids need to learn in order to them to cope in this community versus these other kids? I'm not saying make it unequal. What I'm saying is if the purpose of school is to teach the kids coping skills, civic skills, skills that are going to make them successful members of our society, in the age of information, it's kind of dull to kind of continue to send more information their way and then test them on the information that they know, rather than what is it that you know? Like, do you have social skills such as how to greet people or how to find a job or how to, you know, pay your bills? Do you have actual social skills that are going to make you a successful person? You know, what Tanae is trying to say is that she's got street smarts, she's got a dream, she's got the capabilities of showing that she is a productive member of her society. However, these measurements that the schools are being put through are not showing what she really knows.
And we certainly see that many of the schools performing poorly on standardized tests have a high percentage of students in poverty, more likely to be in communities of color. So what do we do with that? What does that tell us about these tests, John?
They tell us what the tests have always told us, that students that live in communities that are stressed, that have concentrations of both poverty and other types of disadvantage, tend not to do well on these tests. But that doesn't mean they can't do the critical skills that these tests are purporting to measure. For example, the current test that we use, the MSTEP, has a lot of skills that are necessary to perform well on it that are really not related to whether or not you know the content or not. And an example of that is, as you're going through the test itself, it's a computer-based test, and students have to actually scroll through the reading section on the right while they're answering questions on the left. And that could be actually a very difficult task to do if it's not something you do every day. And you can see how students that come from wealthier families that might have access to computers and the internet in the home might have an advantage doing those things. This is actually a really high cognitive load on the student. So asking them to type, to scroll, to do a whole bunch of multitasking things while at the same time answering relatively difficult mathematics and English language arts questions isn't necessarily getting at whether they understand the content. It's whether or not they can take this particular test at that particular time.
John, you make a good point when you brought up the idea that these kids are coming from a stressed environment. Poverty is a stressful thing for young children, and for them to be asked, again, to not only do these highly cognitive tasks, but then to concentrate today in a day that they may or may not have eaten, they may have had some issues at home, it's really deficient. And so to continue as a society, I think, to press this measurement stick as the only measurement sticks to understand whether a school is failing or not is really detrimental to the kids. And I think it just deviates from the purpose of school.
So what else could or should the state be doing, be measuring when deciding if a school is doing a good job educating its students?
So, Sydney, I just want to kind of disentangle these two cases,
okay.
Right?
Yes.
When we're trying to figure out how to improve schools, sometimes tests can be useful to that. So looking as a very gross measure, you can get a sense of how a school is performing, because we want all schools to perform well on these tasks. So I'm not saying that we should do away with tests. I'm saying that these tests should not be the number one indicator of whether a school is successful or not. Having said that, the use of these particular tests in closing schools is different from what do we do to improve these schools.
Right.
And I think it's important to make that distinction. I mean, currently, our accountability system does not actually have a clear yardstick for deciding which schools get tapped for closure, which is a completely different decision than trying to understand which schools need to improve. The way the current system is set up is it's set up to look at the bottom 5% of schools or schools that are not having graduation rates of 67% or higher, and trying to improve those schools over time. I don't necessarily think that's a terrible idea to say which schools need our help.
Exactly.
And if they're really then getting assistance to improve and meet their goals, have these goals a little bit more tied to the community goals and the community desires, I think is the critical part of this. If we want schools to improve, we have to enlist the local community and the local teachers to make that happen. And the way the current system is set up, we're essentially using the assessment system as a stick, which basically says to the teachers, you're not doing your job. And the real problem with an assessment system, an evaluation system that does that, is the very teachers and the very people that you're saying are the problem have to be a critical part of the solution.
So, John, in my opinion, I feel that the schools that are having issues, like the Benton Harbor High School, I think they should be given a pass. I believe that sometimes teachers cannot perform because they are in a box, and you're trying to deal with the student social issues and the school closing, and you're still trying to get these kids to pass these tests, because these kids got tested this year the same way as the kids that were in the schools that did not have these problems. So I'm thinking not giving them a pass as in just do whatever you want, where, you know, forever, but just say for the next 5 years, you know, let's just take the Harry Potter wand. For the next 5 years, you guys sort this out and then report to us how you're sorting this out and create your own case study rather than asking these schools to continue to perform like the schools that don't have these issues.
I think it's also important to note that Benton Harbor probably would not be on a closure list if they were not financially stressed. Michigan has not really made a habit of closing schools over time. They generally only close schools when there are severe financial issues. And part of them not performing well, I think, is just a byproduct of falling enrollment over time, which ends up being really problematic. I mean, 20 years ago, Benton Harbor High School had nearly 1,200 students enrolled, and currently they have about 640.
Taking that in our final few moments here, does closing a school like Benton Harbor High, the way Governor Whitmer's proposing, does that make a better situation for students?
Cindy, it's kind of like saying, does divorce make it a better situation for the kids? It's complicated. You know, for a high school kid, having their high school building close is very much like the Twin Towers coming down. It's traumatic. And then these kids are going to go into schools where it's not their community. they are going to have to speak in a different language, really, whether they're speaking English or their version. They're not going to know how to navigate the system like their peers are going to know how to navigate the system. So they are refugees. They're almost like migrating to a different country. So it's going to be really difficult. And these kids are going to be continued to be tested in the same exact way without having these things into consideration. It's not a solution, but it is also the realities of a systemic problem that we've had for decades.
I also think in some ways it's a way to pass the buck, because to a certain degree, these kids in Benton Harbor have not been well served by the structure that surrounds them. When they go into these other schools, they're going to be absorbed by other structures and their story might be lost. And I think that's really problematic. If they are going to close these schools, there has to be a really comprehensive plan, and there has to be a real plan in the receiving schools for how they're going to be received. And I think without that, you're doing a real disservice to the kids at Benton Harbor.
Sure. John Young is with Michigan State University's College of Education, and of course, Matinga Ragatz is Michigan Radio's education commentator. Lots of stuff to dive into, and we want to thank both of you for doing that.
Thank you, Cindy.
Thank you.